I want you to just imagine something for a second. Imagine you are holding over $800,000 in digital assets.
Oh, wow. That is a lot of money.
Right. And you feel perfectly secure about it. You are not using some, sketchy back alley website or clicking on weird spam emails.
Yeah, you're playing it safe.
Exactly. You downloaded a wealth management app directly from the world's most trusted, most strictly vetted tech ecosystem, the Apple App Store.
The walled garden itself.
Yes, the walled garden. So you type in your login credentials, fully expecting to see your massive balance, and then in a matter of seconds, your entire net worth just vanishes.
Ugh, it is, I mean, it's just the ultimate digital nightmare scenario. You followed the standard consumer playbook, you stayed inside the lines, and you still lost absolutely everything.
And that is the terrifying reality we're diving into today. Our mission for this deep dive is to unpack a highly detailed, honestly pretty eye-opening report from Tech and Analysis.
It's a great report, very thorough.
It really is. It dissects this landmark federal lawsuit, Ramirez v. Apple Inc. And we're going to look at exactly how sophisticated hackers managed to completely bypass Apple's supposedly impenetrable walled garden.
Which is a huge deal.
Right. We will explore the massive legal and antitrust fallout threatening the tech giant, and most importantly, how you can protect your own digital sovereignty when the platforms fail you.
Yeah, because they clearly can fail you.
They absolutely can. Okay, let's unpack this, because to understand this systemic failure, we first have to look at the crime itself and, how these victims were lured into a completely false sense of security.
Right, and that false sense of security is really the foundation of the entire exploit. I mean, for over a decade, Apple has aggressively marketed its App Store as the absolute gold standard for digital safety.
Right, they literally market a promise of 100% human and automated vetting.
Exactly. The consumer expectation is that every single line of code is scanned, it's analyzed, and it's deemed completely safe before it ever reaches a user's screen.
They sell peace of mind. But despite that ironclad guarantee, three cryptocurrency investors, looking at the report here, James Ramirez, who lost $875,000.
Ouch.
Yeah. Christopher Ellis, who lost $840,000, and Jalen Delgado, who lost $120,000. They saw a combined
That
$1.835 million in Bitcoin stolen.
just gone.
Yeah.
And the delivery mechanism for this massive theft was an iOS app listed under the name Sparrow Wallet.
Right.
And the source material provides a really crucial piece of context here. The true Sparrow Wallet is a highly respected open source application. It was created by a renowned Bitcoin developer named Craig Raw.
Okay, but here's the catch, right?
Right. The genuine Sparrow Wallet is a desktop-only application. It only exists for Windows, macOS, and Linux.
Meaning there has never been an official iOS or Android app for Sparrow Wallet. Not one.
Never. Not a single one.
Yeah.
The application these victims downloaded was a complete fabrication from top to bottom.
Wow.
Yet the cybercriminals uploaded a fraudulent clone. They utilized stolen logos, identical branding, all of it. But they didn't stop there.
Because they needed it to look legit on the store.
Exactly. To mask the deception and bypass human skepticism, they deployed these automated bot networks to generate thousands of fake five-star reviews.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they manufactured a highly convincing illusion of social proof. What's fascinating here is that the hackers didn't attack the blockchain's immutable cryptography.
Right, because that's basically impossible.
Yeah, they didn't try to break modern cryptographic ciphers to steal this Bitcoin, because mathematically that would take supercomputers millions of years.
So they went for the human element.
Exactly. They found the weakest link in the entire financial ecosystem, which is consumer trust in Apple's curation. They essentially executed a massive social engineering campaign disguised as a vetted Apple-endorsed product.
It's kind of like it's like walking into a high-end, heavily guarded bank to purchase a vault to store your life savings, only to find out the bank itself sold you a cardboard box with a target painted on it.
That is a perfect analogy.
You trusted the environment completely, so you didn't even think to question the product you were handed.
Right. That environment gave the fraudulent product unearned legitimacy. I mean, the victims let their guard down purely because of the Apple logo on the storefront.
But that brings us to a glaring contradiction, I think. If Apple genuinely scans every line of code, as their marketing constantly claims, how did a cardboard box make it onto those highly guarded digital shelves in the first place?
That is the million-dollar question.
Right. The Tech and Analysis points to some incredibly sophisticated technical evasion tactics, but I really want to understand how they actually tricked the reviewers.
Okay, so the attackers, utilized a highly effective method. It's known in cybersecurity as time of check to time of use evasion.
Wait, time of check to time of use.
Yeah, or 2TTOU for short.
T-O-C-T-O-U. So it's like a split personality thing. The app behaves one way when it knows the teacher is watching, and then it acts completely differently the second the teacher turns their back.
That is a great way to put it, actually.
Yeah.
During Apple's review process, the malicious app deployed a technique called server-side cloaking.
Okay.
When a software reviewer at Apple opened the application to test it, the app's code would actively ping external servers to check the IP address of the device opening it.
Oh, so it's essentially geofencing the reviewers.
Exactly.
It looks to see if the person opening the app is located in Cupertino or operating on a known Apple corporate subnet.
Yes. And the moment it detected an IP address associated with Apple's review facilities, the trap paused.
It just hit itself.
Yep. The app dynamically displayed a completely harmless interface.
Yep.
So an Apple human reviewer, or, you know, their automated screening tools, would open this Sparrow wallet and just see a simple, benign calculator, or like a basic currency converter.
That is wild.
The code looks clean, the function is harmless, so they stamp it as approved and push it live to the App Store.
But the second, a regular user downloads it from their home Wi-Fi in Ohio, or, you know, a cellular network in London.
The attacker's command and control server, the C2 server, dynamically switches the app's interface. It stops sending the calculator code and pushes the fake Sparrow wallet interface instead.
Wow. The report also mentions they bought aged developer accounts from dark web marketplaces to speed up this process. I'm assuming that's because Apple's automated systems don't treat all developers equally.
They absolutely don't. Apple's automated store review algorithms have a built-in trust bias, which honestly makes sense at a massive scale.
Right, if you have millions of apps.
Yeah. If a developer account has been active for 5 years with a clean history of publishing harmless apps, the algorithm subjects their new submissions to far less manual scrutiny than a brand new anonymous developer account.
So by purchasing these legacy accounts on the dark web, the hackers basically bought a VIP pass.
Exactly. A VIP pass that allowed them to bypass the strictest security checks.
But hold on. Let me push back on this technical breakdown for a second.
Sure.
If Apple relies on static code analysis, meaning they are scanning the actual binary files of the app before they approve it, why didn't their systems catch the hidden malware inside the files?
That is a totally fair question.
Right. I mean, even if the screen shows a calculator, shouldn't a code scan catch the underlying data harvesting functions?
And that right there highlights a massive structural blind spot in Apple's methodology.
Okay.
The static analysis only scans the binary files that are present at the exact moment of submission.
Right.
It looks for known malware signatures in the code provided.
Right.
But it completely fails to detect malicious functionality that is fetched dynamically from an external server after the app is already deployed.
Wow. So they check your bags at the door when you walk in, but they don't watch what you pull out of your pockets once you're inside the building.
That's exactly. Apple doesn't employ continuous dynamic sandboxing. They do not continuously monitor an app's behavioral network traffic or payload changes once it is live on millions of iPhones.
Which is crazy to think about.
It is. Because of that architectural decision, they couldn't see the malicious payload being swapped in post-launch.
Yeah.
And once that payload was live, the app flawlessly mimicked Apple's human interface guidelines.
So it looked perfectly native?
Oh, absolutely. It had perfect dark mode support, fluid iOS animations. It even integrated Face ID.
It looked and felt like a premium native product. And here is where the trap finally snaps shut.
Yeah.
The app prompts the user to import their existing wallet by typing in their mnemonic seed phrase. And just for the listener, this is the 12 or 24 word phrase based on the BIP39 standard.
Right. It's crucial to understand what that is.
Yeah. It isn't a password you can just reset with an email. It is the literal mathematical master key to the cryptography holding your Bitcoin.
And the moment the user typed those 24 words into their touchscreen, the application gathered them up.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it sent them in plain text via an HTTPS connection to offshore command and control servers.
Just plain text.
Plain text. Routing the traffic through the TR network to completely mask the physical location of the hackers.
And the second those words hit the server, automated blockchain sweepers instantly derived the private keys and drained the victim's Bitcoin balances.
Instantly.
The funds were immediately routed through cryptocurrency mixers, breaking the trail of custody and making the stolen Bitcoin entirely untraceable.
It is just a devastating, incredibly sophisticated cat and mouse game on the technical side.
It really is. But here's where it gets really interesting, though.
Oh, yeah.
According to the federal lawsuit, the human oversight at Apple is where this incident transitions from a clever cybercrime into gross negligence.
Yeah, the human element is wild.
The technical bypass is one thing, but the timeline detailed in the court documents, these were filed in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California, the timeline is staggering.
It's almost unbelievable. The creator of the real Sparrow wallet, Craig Raw, he was fully aware of these clones.
Right.
The court documents show that he submitted explicit intellectual property and fraud notices to Apple's legal and review teams, starting in late 2024.
He repeatedly warned them. In writing, he told them these mobile clones were fake, that they were actively harvesting user seed phrases, and he reiterated that his organization would never release a mobile application. He literally handed them the crime on a silver platter.
And the response from Apple to the rightful owner of the software, explicitly warning them of a massive financial trap operating on their platform.
What was it?
Absolute silence.
Wow.
For over 18 months, Apple ignored those detailed warnings. They didn't pull the fraudulent listings down. They didn't investigate or flag the associated developer accounts.
They just let the cardboard box sit in the vault. And the analysis shows it goes even further than passive ignorance, actually. Apple's own algorithmic recommendation engines actively featured this fraudulent app in curated cryptocurrency app collections.
That is the part that really stings. They were actively driving user traffic toward the malware.
It's like Apple acted as a bouncer at an exclusive club who takes a 30% cut at the door. The club owner comes up and explicitly warns the bouncer, hey, that guy in the corner is a known pickpocket. I've seen him stealing wallets.
Yeah.
But instead of kicking the guy out, the bouncer gives the pickpocket VIP table service and starts personally introducing him to all the wealthiest guests in the room.
Wow. That is exactly what happened. And the plaintiff's legal counsel, they are building their entire case around that specific dynamic.
Because it's so damning.
It is. Apple's failure to act on those warnings isn't just an embarrassing public relations crisis. It strikes at the very core of their entire global business model. It threatens their legal immunity and shatters their antitrust defenses.
We really need to explore that legal fallout because the ramifications extend way beyond Apple. This lawsuit is directly challenging established Section 230 protections.
Right. If we connect this to the bigger picture, Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act has historically acted as a shield for online platforms.
Huh.
It protects them from being held legally liable for the things third parties post on their infrastructure.
Mm.
Basically, as long as you are a neutral host, you aren't responsible for user-generated content or software.
But the plaintiffs are arguing that Apple is absolutely not a neutral third-party host.
Exactly.
I mean, a neutral host doesn't curate the store, rank the apps, promote them in algorithmically generated feeds, and take a massive 30% commission on transactions.
Right. They're heavily involved.
By doing all of that, Apple crosses the line from a passive landlord to an active publisher. And because they act as a publisher, the lawsuit claims they assume full legal liability for deceptive trade practices occurring on their platform.
And the timing of this lawsuit is just a massive headache for Apple's legal team. I mean, they are currently fighting existential antitrust battles across multiple continents.
It's not a great time for them.
Not at all. In the European Union, they are dealing with the Digital Markets Act, or DMA. Here in the U.S., they are still navigating the ongoing fallout from the Epic Games v. Apple case.
Right, where regulators and competitors are actively trying to force Apple to tear down the walled garden.
Yes.
They want to allow third-party app stores and sideloading, which, for the listener, just means letting people download software directly from the internet, totally outside of Apple's control.
And Apple's singular, foundational defense for maintaining their strict monopoly on app distribution is consumer protection.
They say they keep us safe.
Exactly. Their legal argument is that if regulators force them to open the iPhone to outside app stores, the device will become a chaotic playground for malware and scams.
But this $1.8 million malware heist completely shatters that pretext.
It really does.
It proves that the supposedly pristine walled garden is already compromised by devastating malware. And worse, that Apple's own curation tools actually promoted it.
Yep.
So given the stakes here, is Apple actually incentivized to settle this out of court as quickly as possible? It seems like they would want to prevent a judge from setting a binding legal precedent that legally destroys the myth of the walled garden.
Oh, absolutely. Legal analysts strongly suspect a quiet settlement is their primary goal.
That makes sense.
Yeah. A settlement allows Apple to compensate James Ramirez and the other victims without having a federal judge officially rule that Apple's curation claims constitute deceptive trade practices.
Because if a precedent is set that dismantles platform immunity protections for curated app stores, it would forever alter the economic dynamics of digital software distribution.
Forever. Apple, Google, and others would face massive financial exposure across all international jurisdictions.
Wow. Okay, so the lawyers are going to fight over billions in court, and they will argue about platform liability for years to come. But we need to bring this back to the individual.
Yeah, the user.
What does this mean for you, the person listening right now? If the App Store search bar is essentially compromised, how is a normal person supposed to safely interact with digital assets without becoming the next James Ramirez?
The final section of the Tekken analysis provides a really crucial framework for self-custody. It outlines mandatory security rules for anyone holding digital assets, because we clearly cannot rely on platform providers to filter out the threats.
We are on our own.
We are. The first major shift is abandoning platform search engines entirely.
Okay, so if I can't type Sparrow Wallet into the App Store or Google, how do I actually find the real software?
You have to bypass the app stores and download software via direct links from the official open source website.
Okay.
The report notes that scammers frequently purchase sponsored ads to position their fake websites or apps above legitimate results in search bars.
Sneaky.
Very. Furthermore, for advanced users, merely downloading from a website isn't enough. You must verify the PGP signatures of the software.
Right. Break down what verifying a PGP signature actually does for the user, just in case people aren't familiar.
Sure. PGP, or pretty good privacy, uses cryptographic math to prove authenticity. When a legitimate developer like Craig Raw releases software, they digitally sign the code with a private cryptographic key that only they possess.
Oh, okay.
By checking that signature against their public key, you are mathematically verifying two things. One, that the file actually came from the original creator, and two, that not a single line of code was tampered with during the download process.
It's like a tamper-proof digital wax seal on the software package.
Exactly.
That makes sense. But the analysis also points out a massive vulnerability regarding how we interact with our seed phrases, the 24 master words. They argue you should have a rule of zero mobile seed import.
Yes, highly critical.
Why is a mobile phone such a dangerous place for those words, even if the app is real?
Because mobile operating systems are fundamentally designed for seamless convenience, and convenience is the enemy of strict security.
That's a great point.
If you generated a secure wallet on an offline desktop, typing those master keys into an internet-connected mobile operating system exposes them to massive vulnerabilities. Mobile phones constantly run background processes, like keyloggers for predictive text. And they utilize cloud-synced clipboards.
Oh, wait. Meaning if I copy and paste my seed phrase on my iPhone, Apple's iCloud might sync that copied text to their server so I can paste it on my Mac.
Yes, exactly.
So my offline keys just got uploaded to the cloud without me even realizing it.
Without you even knowing. And if your cloud account is ever compromised, your digital wealth is gone. You must disable cloud clipboard syncing and predictive keyboard learning when handling any kind of financial credentials.
Man, if mobile phones are basically sieves leaking data, how are we supposed to safely manage these assets?
The safest methodology is hardware key isolation.
Okay.
Use an air-gapped hardware wallet, like a Ledger or a Trezor.
Air-gapped meaning it never touches the internet directly.
Correct. These hardware devices store your private keys inside an isolated, tamper-resistant, secure element chip.
Oh, nice.
When you want to send Bitcoin, the transaction data is sent to the device. It is cryptographically signed offline inside that secure element chip, and only the signed approval is sent back to the computer.
So the keys are safe.
Right. Your private keys never actually leave the hardware device, they never touch the internet, and they never sit in your mobile device's memory.
Wow. You also can't just trust a familiar logo, right? The report emphasizes cross-referencing developer identities.
Yeah, you have to be vigilant.
Scammers use subtle fake LLC names like Sparrow Inc. or Sparrow Software LLC listed right under the app title to trick users who just give it a passing glance.
Yeah, they prey on people rushing.
You have to compare those developer names with the official GitHub repositories of the open source projects.
This raises an important question about consumer behavior, really.
What's it?
Why do we so blindly delegate our financial security to tech platform providers? The sheer convenience of the App Store has conditioned us to treat digital asset protection as something Apple or Google just handles in the background, rather than an ongoing, rigorous personal responsibility.
So what does this all mean for our daily habits? It means we have to completely rebuild our mental model of mobile devices. Think about it using an analogy from the physical world.
All right.
Typing your offline 24-word seed phrase into an internet-connected smartphone touchscreen is like taking the combination to your hidden, fireproof wall safe and broadcasting it on a massive digital billboard in the middle of Times Square.
It's exactly like that.
You are taking something designed to be offline and secret and exposing it to the most surveilled, hyper-connected environment on Earth.
It is a recipe for absolute disaster. The Sparrow Wallet heist provides the definitive proof of that vulnerability.
It really does.
The label, verified by Apple, is no longer a blank check for absolute security. We have reached the definitive end of blind trust in centralized mobile app store curation.
As we wrap up this deep dive, the tension between these two digital worlds is incredibly striking to me.
Oh, for sure.
On one side, centralized tech monopolies are proving structurally incapable of protecting our digital wealth from sophisticated social engineering and server-side cloaking.
They just can't keep up.
And then on the other side, decentralized self-custody is clearly fraught with fatal user errors, where a single mistake like trusting a search bar or typing a phrase into a phone literally costs you your entire life savings.
It leaves the everyday consumer caught in a very dangerous, unforgiving middle ground.
It really does. Which leaves us with a final thought for you to mull over as you look at the apps on your own phone today. If the centralized platforms can't protect us and self-custody is this perilous, are we heading toward a future digital economy where only the hyper-technical can safely hold assets?
That's a scary thought.
What happens to the grand promise of democratized finance when the everyday consumer tools we rely on become the very traps that bankrupt us?